Radio EcoShock with your host, Alex Smith.
Will wildfires push faster climate change? Are wildland fires increasing? Is the vast boreal forest around the world in trouble? Frightening fire news has been pouring in, most recently from northern Alberta and nearby Canadian provinces. Nobody knows wildfire science better than Dr. Michael Flanagan. He is the longtime professor at the University of Alberta, now at Thompson Rivers University. Mike held leading roles as BC Innovation Research Chair in Emergency Management and Fire Science. Flanagan was editor-in-chief of the International Journal of Wildland Fire. He is an internationally known wildfire expert. From Kamloops, British Columbia, Mike Flanagan, welcome back to Radio EcoShock.
Great to be with you, Alex.
It seems strange to find you anywhere but Alberta. What are you up to?
I am doing exactly what I've been doing for the last 40 years, is studying fire, weather, climate change. And you know, originally it was with the Canadian Forest Service, and then the University of Alberta, and now Thompson Rivers University. And you know, to be honest, BC and BC Interior particularly have been the hotbed of fire activity the last few years, 2017, 2018, 2021, all very active years in BC. So I'm here trying to address some of the issues related to wildland fire.
Well, I know about those fires. I've lived through a couple of them, and we've been nervous ever since. So, very early spring fires in northern Alberta forced the evacuation of almost 30,000 people this year. Two big fires approached the town of Fox Creek, population over 2,000 people. Mike, how would you describe these spring fires for our international listeners?
So, for Alberta, May is the busiest month for fire activity. So this isn't unusual. And if you go back in time, 2011, part of a town of Slave Lake burned down. 2016, of course, Fort McMurray had the fire. 2019, high level, Chuckate Creek fire. So every 3 to 5 years, we seem to see this activity. And spring activity is kind of common all across Canada. It's that period. Most of Canada has snow for a good chunk of the winter. Once the snow leaves, it exposes that dead organic material from the previous autumn. And it's this dead organic material is easy for a fire to start and spread in. And so you see a bump across Canada of human-caused fires typically. But in Alberta, it's so pronounced because of the weather and because there's so much human activity on the landscape, industrial, oil, gas, forestry, but also recreational activities that start fires. So you get the weather, you get the ignitions, and if the fuel's dry, you're ready for fire.
Well, I'm just a little confused because these big fires actually started in very late April. I thought there might be still snow on the ground up there. Sometimes there are in the far north. What happened this spring to help fire conditions?
So whether you're in Alberta or the Amazon or Australia, there are three ingredients required for a fire to occur, and it applies everywhere. First is vegetation. We call it fuel because it's stuff that burns, whether it's the grass and needles on the forest floor, the shrubs, the trees, how much you have, what type, how dry it is, important aspects. Second, you need ignition. In Canada and in Alberta, it's about 50-50 in terms of human-caused or lightning-caused, though there's a seasonal shift with human cause dominating in the spring and lightning cause dominating in the summer. And third, conducive fire weather. We say hot, dry, windy. You can get by with dry and windy. But this year, you know, central northern Alberta had all three in spades. It was a very dry or droughty winter. So the stage was set and over 1 million hectares has burned. And in terms of year to date, that's the most active fire month in our records. 1981 had more fire over the entire season, but there was a very hot, dry August that dominated that fire season. So it is historic in that sense. This is the most area burned we've seen so early in the season. In terms of evacuations, yes, a lot of different communities impacted, and so it was very challenging. Of course, 2016 evacuation numbers were close to 90,000 because of the community of Fort McMurray. A very active, very early season, primarily human-caused fires. There was some early lightning this year, which started some of the fires, but human-caused fires that are mostly accidental. Arson is not a large problem in Canada, but, you know, wherever humans go, fire follows.
You know, as we speak, an extreme rainfall event is pounding down on our roof and our yard. And I was wondering, didn't the repeated atmospheric rivers that struck the West Coast this past winter, I guess they just didn't reach northern Alberta and the Peace River region. Wasn't the snowpack big there, too?
No, it was abnormally dry for much of Alberta. Mountains are a very good blocker for precipitation. They squeeze a lot of precipitation out in the form of snow or rain, depending on your elevation. So, yeah, the pattern was not quite the same for Alberta. And actually, parts of BC, especially the Peace Country, the northeast corner, were also dry, as well as parts of the interior. So that the coastal range sucked a lot of that moisture out of the atmosphere. Snowpacks were normal, some places a little bit above, some places a little bit below, but Alberta was dry.
Well, as you say, up to a million hectares burned in Alberta by May 21st, 2023, and another million wildlands burned in Saskatchewan. Do you think Canada could set new records for lands burned over this year, or is there any way to know that kind of thing?
Well, first, in Canada, we deal with hectares, okay? So a hectare is about 2.4 acres, so it's quite a bit larger than an acre. It's hard to say. You know, we had record years in 94, 95, 89. We're all very active fire seasons in Canada. Are we going to reach that? It really determines what the rest of the summer looks like. And, you know, we forecast the weather for about a week with some skill, but, you know, seasonal forecasts, there's not a great deal of skill, especially for precipitation. Temperature, there can be. I will add one caveat. We have been in La Nina, a triple dip La Nina, which is now over, and we're ENSO neutral, but all the models suggest where we're going to El Nino, and we may be going to a moderate to strong El Nino fairly quickly. And that means warmer and drier conditions for parts of Western Canada, in particular BC. So BC could have a very active fire season, but I can't say if it's going to be a record-breaking year. I mean, we're getting close to our 10-year running average, and it's, you know, still May. So looks like an active year. Record-breaking, hard to say.
Now, to be clear, is it true that further north in the boreal forest, where a few people live, Canada doesn't try to fight the fires? They just run their natural course. We let them burn, don't we?
As we should, okay, to be quite honest. And I would say that applies to some of the provinces, too. And maybe I'll back up just for a second. Fire management is the responsibility of the landowner in Canada. So that means 10 provinces have fire management. Two territories, Yukon Northwest Territories, have fire management. We have a third territory, Nunavut, that doesn't practice fire management, but they do have fires, and they just let them burn. All right? But parts of the provinces do make an assessment on each individual fire, and if it's not threatening anything, and actually may be beneficial, they allow the fire, they monitor the fire, allow it to burn until it changes course, until it goes out in the winter. So we are changing how we deal with fire. But yes, in the farther north you go, the more likely it is a let burn policy or a monitor and manage policy.
So fire's a natural part of the forest ecosystem. Maybe the real problem is that more humans are moving into fire zones and then demanding expensive firefighting. What do you think?
The way we've dealt with fire is at least Western European approach when they came here through colonization was that fire was bad and that we should put fire out at all costs. And that's just not the right approach anymore. And even the iconic Smokey the Bear has a couple messages. One is, you know, only you can prevent forest fires, which is a great message. But the other one is kind of fire is bad and we should bring it out. Fire is natural. It's Mother Nature at work. It's the cycle of life. Our boreal forest in particular survives and thrives in a regime of semi-regular stand-renewing, stand-replacing, high-intensity fire. And they have the trees have lots of strategies to deal with this. But some of the pines and some spruce have what we call serotonous cones. These are cones that have a waxy resin, and they need heat to open up the cones to release the seed. Fire provides that heat. So you see a stand of jack pine, a fire goes through, you get another stand of jack pine. It's just Mother Nature at work, and for years we've been fighting Mother Nature, but now we are moving forward, and when and where possible, we try and work with Mother Nature and allow fire back on the landscape. And soon enough, you get a patchwork of recently burned areas, and this becomes important because recently burned areas are unlikely to reburn for 10, 20 years, if it's a wetland, even 50 years. Or if they do catch fire, they're low-intensity fire that, and if they're unwanted, we can put them out. And, you know, there's lots of reasons to put fire in the landscape. Think of mountain pine beetle outbreak we had in British Columbia, you know, a decade and a half ago. Fire is a great agent knocking down mountain pine beetle. Spruce budworm out east, and there's lots of forest pests that fire kind of keeps a lid on. So fire is actually natural, in some cases good. Of course, if it's 2 kilometers from your doorstep, that's not good, and we have to put those fires out.
Okay, now my concern, though, is about wildfires changing with climate change, and you've co-authored a few papers on that, even in the last couple of years. How have fires changed as the world warms?
So as we warm, we are seeing more fire. And, you know, people say, hold on, why is temperature so important? And here I'm not talking about individual fire like the Lytton Fire or the Fort McMurray Fire, where wind becomes very critical. I'm talking about fire over a larger area, like the province of Ontario, for a longer period of time, like decades. And temperature is really important for three reasons. First, the warmer it is, the longer the fire season. And we're seeing that in parts of Canada already. Alberta, for example, official fire season start is now March 1st. Last decade, it was April 1st. Fire seasons are starting earlier and lasting longer. Last fall, 2022, we had high-intensity crown fires burning in the Northwest Territories through the night in October, and I've never seen that before. Right now, there's active fires in the Northwest Territories into May, and that's, you know, not unheard of, but it's uncommon. Second, the warmer it gets, the more lightning we see. And, you know, I did mention that in Canada, it's about 50-50 between human cause and lightning cause, but those lightning cause fires are causing 80 to 90% of the area burned. And human-caused fires, the numbers have been going down and area burn has been going down due to education and fire bans. So increased lightning means more fire, okay? And, you know, that's if things are being equal, but actually things aren't equal because the third reason is probably the most important, is as the temperature increases, the ability of the atmosphere to suck the moisture out of the fuel increases almost exponentially. So what that means is we'll get drier fuels unless we see increases in precipitation to compensate for this drying effect from warming. But all the forecasts or models of futures suggest most areas of Canada, our fire seasons are going to be drier, not wetter. So the bottom line here is if we're warmer, we're going to see drier fuels. And this is a critical aspect about fire. The drier the fuel, the easier it is for fires to start, easier it is for fires to spread, and it means more fuel, vegetation, is available to burn, which leads to those higher intensity fires, which are difficult to impossible to extinguish.
The Copernicus satellite monitoring system found very high carbon emissions from these recent fires in the Canadian West, the highest carbon emissions since 2019, they said. Are wildfires pumping a lot of new carbon into the atmosphere?
And this is where we have to really dig down a bit here. So on upland sites, many of these sites are what I would call carbon neutral over a longer time period. Yes, when a fire goes through, it ejects large amounts of carbon into the atmosphere through the combustion process. But then those new pine trees or aspen trees start sucking up the carbon and start to grow, and so it balances out. Where the balance sheet doesn't balance is on those wetlands. peatlands in particular. You know, peat is organic material that's 40 centimeters or more in depth. Typically sphagnum mosses are an example. So they've been building up carbon, organic biomass, for thousands of years since the last ice age. So it's a carbon bank, a storage. So when a fire goes through, you can burn thousands of years of accumulation into the atmosphere. So yes, there's the potential for significant releases from these peatlands. And I'll put into context, there was work done in Indonesia on peat fires there during a particularly bad year in the late 90s. And they found that the carbon emissions were equivalent to 40% of global fossil fuel emissions. The peatlands and the boreal forests are 30 times more than what Indonesia has. So there's an enormous amount of potential greenhouse gas release from these fires. So the argument is the warmer we get, which we just talked about, the more fires we see. The more fires we see in the boreal wetlands, peatlands, means significant increases in greenhouse gases, which feeds the warming, which makes it warmer, which means more fire. Eventually, the cycle breaks down because you burn all the peat. And that's it. You use up your whole bank account. But there's other aspects, too, because, you know, as you go farther north, there's something called permafrost. And this is just a layer of ice that stays all year long below the surface. And in this organic material, there's hydrates. And this goes for the seabed floors as well. If it thaws, it releases these hydrates, primarily methane. Methane is a very effective greenhouse gas. So this could also feed the warming. So, yes, it is a real concern.
Check out the Radio EcoShock website. We're at ecoshock.org.
This is Radio EcoShock. Alex is talking wildfires with Canadian expert Dr. Michael Flanagan.
Well, another factor I think about is timing. I mean, even if those big dumps of carbon dioxide are recaptured by new trees in a few years, I worry in the meantime the extra carbon could add enough warming to trigger other changes in the climate system. Would you agree the time factor for wildfire emissions might be critical?
So there's a lot of moving parts here. Okay. So some aspects of fire are contributing to warming and some aspects are not, okay? So what does contribute is injection of greenhouse gases into the atmosphere, absolutely, you know, generates more warming. Black carbon being deposited on snow and ice definitely is a warming factor and helps, you know, the melting of ice and snow more rapidly because black surfaces absorb the solar radiation instead of the white surfaces reflecting it. But when fire goes through and takes out a conifer forest, which are dominant in many of our northern areas in the boreal, during the winter, instead of having a green land cover, you now have a white land cover, and so you have an albedo effect that's a cooling effect. So the solar radiation comes in, gets bounced back into space, whereas if there had been a forest there, the green conifer forest would be absorbing that solar radiation. So there's checks and balances in our system. So it's hard to say, you know, exactly how significant this is. And this is a Nature or Science paper waiting to be done to take a look at, you know, the accounting sheet and the checks and balances to see how big and which direction. I argue it is a warming influence overall. I have colleagues who say it's a net cooling effect. Who's right? Well, let's do the work and find out.
Wow, that's a big question. So in our 2011 interview, you gave two reasons why burned forests might not return at all. First, a super hot fire may sterilize the soil, and second, if the fire returns within just a few seasons, the conifer starts may not have reached that seeding age. Do either of these apply in this year's Alberta fires?
Potentially. You know, as we see more and more fire in the landscape, trees may not reach sexual maturity so that you get no regeneration. So these repeat disturbances, fire after fire, in close succession, are a real problem for regeneration. And there are papers out there that suggest in places like Alberta that the boreal forest, as we know it, in terms of the trees, may disappear as early as, you know, sometime mid to later this century. which is a scary thought. So if you look back in the past, there were times where Alberta was not forested. But it doesn't mean fire is going to disappear, because what replaces the forest will be either a shrubland or a grassland. And grasslands can burn every year. As long as we have those three ingredients, vegetation slash fuel, ignition, and weather, we're going to have fire. But yeah, that is a concern that, you know, if we keep seeing fire after fire after fire, especially if these high-intensity fires like we've been seeing, trees will have trouble regenerating. Of course, humans can play a role because we plant a great deal of the boreal forest that's been harvested. We plant. So we could do this with burned areas as well to keep it forested, at least in the short term.
That's a pretty big-scale project. It would be expensive, but I could see it being possible. So last week I spoke with Dr. Andrew Dessler, the atmospheric scientist at Texas A&M University. Andrew said warming was pushing more extremes in the hydrological cycle, so we may get extreme rainfall events followed by a longer-than-normal dry spell. And I thought about you, and I thought, well, maybe with these thin northern soils that can dry in just a few hot days, maybe this new pattern of extreme rains and then drought could spur like periods of wildfires during the summer as opposed to just one long summer of fire.
Extremes are another critical aspect of understanding fire. In Canada, 2 to 3% of our fires burn, 97% of the area burned. In Western United States, it's even more dramatic. 1% of the fires burn, 99% of the area burned. And much of this happens on a relatively small number of extreme fire weather days. So extremes drive the business. The tail wags the dog. You know, a fire that starts on average summer day, if it's one of those unwanted fires a couple kilometers from Grand Prairie or wherever, it's easy to put out. But if the fire starts on one of those critical extreme fire weather days and the fuels are dry, you have a very narrow window to put that fire out. It's easy to put out when it's small, but once it gets bigger than a soccer pitch or football field, it becomes very challenging, perhaps even impossible. And this can happen in minutes. Litton fire, from the time it started until the time it was burning down the town, was between 15 and 20 minutes. So you have a very narrow window to respond to a fire in those situations. And as we go forward with climate change, we expect more extremes at both ends of the spectrum, drought and flood. But on the drought side, that's where our fires often occur. And we are seeing more extreme fire weather in the last 40 years, and we expect this trend to continue. So we expect to see in many parts of the world more fire activity. So we have to learn to live with fire. And unfortunately, the smoke. There are kind of three aspects of fires that are challenging. First, there's the flames, okay, that can burn down your community. Second, there's smoke that can travel thousands of kilometers. So if you're downtown Toronto, the likelihood of your place burning down from a wildland fire is essentially zero. Your air quality could be in the tank for weeks because of fires in northern Ontario, northern Quebec. Smoke can travel thousands of kilometers, and the more we know about smoke, we know it's really bad for humans, okay? And the third reason is what I'll call cascading effects. And those atmospheric rivers of 2021 in British Columbia are a classic example. You had fires all along the Coquihalla Highway, interior BC, a major corridor for getting to the coast. And then the rains come in November, atmospheric rivers, and you get flooding, debris flows. You know, the fires don't cause that, but those areas are much more likely to flood and cause debris flows. Some of the ash can be what we call hydrophobic. It means it repels water, so it's almost like the rain's coming down on concrete. If you have some topography, it just flows straight downhill and causes all sorts of problems.
Can fire smoke reach the stratosphere where it would stay much longer in the atmosphere and travel around the world?
It does. Okay, something called pyro-CBs, pyrocumulonimbus, fire-generated thunderstorms, and you know, work published from Australia had a horrific fire season in 2019/2020, and the amount of smoke injected into the stratosphere was like a moderate volcano. volcano in equivalence. It caused regional cooling and all sorts of other climatic influences. So, yes, and once the stratosphere is a very stable layer, and material can get in there and stay there for many years, and also can inject moisture into the stratosphere. Moisture is a byproduct of the combustion process, and these fire-generated thunderstorms go from smoke to actually pyrocumulus clouds with water vapor, and water vapor also can play a role in the climate system. So, yeah, there's a lot of ways that fires influence our climate system.
Mike, you've been advising governments at all levels about wildfires. Have you formulated ideas for forest management policies? What should society be doing when it comes to wildfires?
There's lots that we can do, okay? There's lots that we are doing, but, you know, that we can do some things better, okay? First, all human-caused fires are preventable. So we can do a better job with fire bans and use a tool called forest closures even more, which are even more effective. Not very popular, and Alberta actually did use them eventually this fire season. California's used them, Ontario's used them. All it means is you close the forest to industrial activity and recreational activity. No people cause fires. So there's one clear example. And now I'll pull in some emergency management perspectives. Emergency management has phases. Prevention, mitigation, preparedness, response, recovery, and some people include review. So fire management does a really great job at preparedness and even a better job at response. We can do better in prevention, okay? And, you know, using those fire bans and forest closures, continuing education is useful. As I say, in Canada, human-caused fires are going down, which is great, okay? But, you know, we should be able to eliminate them. And whether they're coming from power lines, railways, campfires, agricultural burning, et cetera, we need to do better. We can have enhanced early warning system. We have early warning systems now, but I think they can be improved through tools like machine learning, artificial intelligence. But the way we respond is still at times what I'll call a knee-jerk reaction, in that we ask for additional resources, whether it's crews or helicopters, after the fire episode or event has already started. As I mentioned, our weather forecasts are good for about, you know, 7 days or so. We can see, like, a freight train that was coming, you know, this May to Alberta and saying, hey, we should be prepared. We should call for additional resources, crews, right now. And there's a facility in Winnipeg called CIFSE, Canadian Interagency Forest Fire Center, that arranges this. But by the time you make the call, it takes 3 days for that helicopter or that crew to reach the fire line. If you make the call when the fire is already burning, that's too late, okay? You need to make the call before the fire starts. And using things to say, where are we expecting the extreme fire weather to occur? Up to a week in advance. Where do we expect new fires to start? Up to a week in advance, so we can get the resources we need and move them to the appropriate locations to deal with those unwanted fires, I mean, is where we should be going.
And as we wrap up, have you seen one of these fire monsters up close yourself?
Yes. Quite a few, yes. Elephant Hill in 2017. It was just burning like stink, and it was actually on a CBC Nature Things show, Into the Fire, if I recall what it was called, and you know, there's some great video of that fire. They're frightening to be close to. They're like a freight train, and a lot of heat, and they generate their own wind. Yeah, it's quite something to be close to a large, high-intensity fire.
From Thompson River University in BC, we've been speaking with longtime fire expert Dr. Michael Flanagan. You can find links to follow up in my show blog at ecoshock.org. Mike, thank you for taking the time to help us understand. Really appreciate it.
Oh, my pleasure, Alex.
I'm Alex Smith for Radio EcoShock. That's it for this show. Check out all our past programs free at ecoshock.org. Thank you for listening, and let's meet up again next week.